Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, my name's Adam from Toronto, Ontario. And I subscribe to the Creative Control Patreon because I feel that at the end of the day, there are very few people in the industry who are able to consistently get the kind of quality interviews out of very diverse subjects of many creative stripes and disciplines, as Vish does pretty well on every episode of the podcast. It's a no-brainer to me that I want to support this when you factor that in to all of the bonus content you get on Patreon. And, you know, it's a listener-supported podcast, so I want to keep the great content coming. So that's why you should also support Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Eve Jarvis is a talented and resourceful multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, producer, and singer who calls Montreal home. Originally from Alberta, Jarvis recently released a new album called Sundry Rock Song Stock, which he recorded entirely outdoors. The acclaimed album is available via Flemish Eye in Canada and Anti Records worldwide, and Jarvis and I connected for a talk about it recently. We also talked about his affection for a tree museum, the unique manner in which he made Sundry Rock Song Stock, why he does not write topical songs, his new band with his partner Romy Lightman, other future plans, and more. a part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol and Massey Hall's concert film series live at masseyhall.com, where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past podcast guests like Chad Van Galen, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 581st episode of Creative Control, featuring the amazing Eve Jarvis with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Eve. How's it going?
Good. How are you, Vish?
I'm well. Thanks for asking. Where in the world are you?
I'm in Ontario, a couple hours north of Toronto, at the beautiful Tree Museum.
Tree Museum? Where is that?
It's just outside of Gravenhurst. And it's just this beautiful outdoor sculpture destination.
What is with you in the outdoors? This is all the language and biographical information about your new record, Sundry Rock Song Stock. You're like an outdoors person now? Has that always been the case? Do you like the outdoors a lot?
Well, my spirit has always been so inclined, but I have just this space. I've been here for the last 3 years, and I'm very attached to it. So my walls have come down.
That's good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So, sorry, you live in this Gravenhurst area now?
Well, I've spent the last 3 summers here with Rome. We've been working here in residence, basically, since we've been together.
Oh, okay. So what does that mean? Like artistic residence? Kind of like artist in residence?
Yeah, I'm just recording my ass off. That's what that means.
That's awesome. That sounds good. See, I think of you as, you live all over the place. But I think of you as kind of a Montreal person, and I guess I didn't clue in. I think we've spoken in the last 3 years, but I just didn't clue in. So you've been in Ontario most of the time. Do you recall what prompted that move from... I mean, yes, it was... Is that correct? Is that trajectory correct? Montreal to Ontario?
Well, yeah, I'm still like... I'm still based out of Montreal. I like... most of the pandemic, I was in Montreal this year... and I came here July, which is a little later than we usually come here because we can only spend the months when the snow, the road that's not maintained makes it inaccessible. So, we can only spend the warm months here, the fall and the summer, bit of the spring. But we came later than usual because of the pandemic, and I was in Montreal, and I still think I don't know how long I'll be based in Montreal anymore. Up until now, I would have considered myself, considered that being the home base while, I'm still here half the year maybe. But I love the land here, so I'm comfortable.
So the move, the transition sounds like it was pandemic related. However, you've moved from Quebec, which is the province in Canada with the most cases of COVID-19, to Ontario, which is the second, like the province with the second highest number of cases. I'm calling you from Alberta, where you're from originally, and I live now. And we have the third most cases.
Oh, is that right?
Cases. Yeah.
So well, I've got to be top three. I'm very competitive.
Wait a minute. Maybe I could be wrong about that. Maybe British Columbia was high at one point. I'd have to, I'm not really tracking this as much because it makes me nuts, but it has been, So anyway, let's go back to you. You moved from... Was it pandemic-related, this move to Ontario, and the fact that you say you may not go back to Montreal, is that pandemic-related in any way?
No, I've just, developed a real attachment to this kind of, what do you call it, the shield. The rock is just amazing, and I just plan on probably spending the better part of my days here. I mean, maybe not specifically at the Tree Museum, but otherwise just keeping my, I don't know, my options open for you know, a move, a permanent move somewhere on in this area. Yeah.
That's cool. Now, what is the distinction? Like, I'm trying to wrap my head around a tree museum, because when I walk into a forest or a jungle, I feel like I'm in a tree museum. It's all the old trees. They're old. They're on display. That, to me, is a tree museum.
That's
right. You're saying there's some kind of building you're in or a structure that has taken the outdoor tree museum and turned it into an indoor tree museum? Is that what you're saying?
I think I'm in the only place here that isn't the tree museum, which is this cabin. So you're right. The forest is the tree museum, and there are pieces in it. There's these, you know, kind of large scale, some smaller, but there's some pretty large carvings and structures and just beautiful things to hike to and around.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So is there like prehistoric trees? Is there like artwork that was made by trees? Is there like, you know, tree warriors on display and sort of some sort of taxidermy thing? What's going on inside of the tree museum generally? I'm not familiar with it.
Well, right now the colors are brilliant. So that's the show. That's the main attraction right now. That's the exhibition for the fall. But otherwise, permanently, there's like I said, all sorts of metalwork and stone carving, and there's like just structures all over the place. Yeah,
it sounds cool. Like it sounds cool, and I'm not trying to make light of it. But there is part of me that wonders if there's like a whole alternate tree universe, and a tree museum captures all the history of this alternate tree universe. So like, there's a display about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and the perpetrator was Tree Harvey Oswald. You know what I mean? Like, that's what's in my head. I kind of like the idea that trees just had their own thing going, and it's similar to, it's like a parallel universe. I like that. Don't you like the idea that trees,
that is the case?
Yeah, that is, I guess it is kind of the case. Okay, so I alluded to this and you said it's your natural state, but did you not make your latest record ostensibly outside? Is that correct?
Yeah, I recorded the foundational elements of this album outside, the guitar, the Rhodes, a lot of the synth, with basically my entire studio at the time, just outside every day, almost rain or shine. I had a plastic, I had a tarpaulin ready to go, just recording outside all day, every day.
Okay.
last year. Yeah. And with that, you know, it I was approaching the music differently, so it made for I don't know if I had anticipated, it was definitely my intent to have a project ready by this time, but the thing that really propelled it forward was that change of pace from working outside.
Okay. So what is that? When I listen to your record, I don't necessarily hear the there's all sorts of ambience on your recordings generally. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. So does the outdoor framework of this recording, do you feel like, I listen to it and I don't hear the outside as much as I would think, given that the majority of it, if not all of it, was made outside. How does the outside inform this record sonically, maybe even in your approach to, themes, lyrical themes? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, it definitely, like, there's definitely, like I said, a pace that is kind of easy to tap into, you know, if you leave, you know, you leave a little space for it. I think when people leave space, a certain kind of space in the studio, I think they're just compensating for the fact that they're in a controlled environment like that. For me, anyway, that's my experience. When I go outside, the element of control and that is eliminated, the lack of that, completely influences my playing and allows me to maybe hold things down in a way that I'm more impelled to open things up otherwise.
You mentioned space there in this context. What is space in the studio as it relates to space, outdoor space, I guess? What is your definition of space there, or a distinction of space between an indoor space? Sorry, I keep saying space. Between an indoor studio and an outdoor studio, how does space sort of relate to what you were just talking about?
I guess it just, it's like a matter of navigating the framework or the room. Like, I feel like it's a question of that, because for me, I'm like approaching or trying to project something, and the music that is laid down and recorded is the result of how I navigate my way towards that. So space is just a metric.
It's the metric.
Sense. Yeah. It's like, okay, how I measure, just as like in the same way that space is measured realistically, it plays the same role. It has the same weight in production for me.
So just so I can get a clear handle on this, is the space on a song of yours the space between instrumentation, the space between your voice, the space between what you're singing and the soundscape? Is that maybe, I know I gave a few different examples of what space could mean, but is that
It's not quite literally like proximity of like the sounds.
Okay.
It's like, it's really like an approach, and it's like really like the decisions that I'm making is how I would define space.
Okay.
Yeah.
So exactly where, what, so you set up outside, where exactly did you set up outside in relation to your home, or, you know, where did you actually set up? Was it a park near your house, or was it out in did you drive out to some, you know, get out to some forest area? Where did you actually
do this? No, see, like,
this?
I would never do that. I would never do that, because like I record, you know, first thing. I mean, I try not to be precious about it, and that's something I really try to avoid being precious about creative endeavors. So I need to be able to be right next to the studio at all times. So I'm not going. That's why I don't go to studios. That's why I don't go, you know, that's why I'm not gonna go anywhere. You know, I have to record where I'm at. I have to record where I wake up. So I would set up just right outside the house where I am here, right outside this cabin. So there's just so much space for,
okay,
you know, so many options. Like, I would just set up on, you know, I obviously need power. So I would chain as many extension cords as I could to see how far I could get. Not very far, you know. But plenty of, you know, four. I had four sides, so I was on each side of the house.
Okay, so I think we talked about this last time in terms of one of the reasons you didn't at the time really love touring is because it just impeded your ability to record when inspiration struck. Is that accurate? Is that an accurate?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so, and I acknowledge that could change, like with technology, like. When I was in Europe, I was traveling on a bus, and I was like, oh, I could absolutely have an entire studio in this and be comfortable. But then it would be like, I don't know. I mean, there's something about travel that makes it so that I'm so averse to touring. It's travel in itself. But yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think we talked about whether or not you could record in a van.
Yeah. Like I could make it happen, and I could, and that would be like a band-aid for sure.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, this sort of goes back, or rather that conversation, I think, it has some bearing on this notion of preciousness that you talk about. How you don't, do you know where that stems from though? Like, did you have experiences in studios where everyone was taking it so seriously and overthinking things? Like, I'm trying to kind of delve into what your notion of preciousness is in relation to recording, because I know you rely on your impulses and your instincts, and some of your songs are, they're songs in the moment that they arrived. Like you start going, and that's the song, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder how that, your creative impulse relates to the preciousness of capturing it, if you will. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. Well, I just think that, you know, the problem for me has never been that people take things too seriously. It's always been the opposite for me. It's that. Music is often approached and compartmentalized. It's often compartmentalized from people's lives. So people, you know, without generalizing, I feel like for the most part, music is not engaged with the intensity and with the focus that that it deserves. But with that comes, you know, when, like I say, trying to get away from that preciousness. What I mean is that compartmentalization, is that putting music in a box somewhere that is something to do, and it's somewhere to be, and it's people to collaborate with, and it's things that you want to say. But for me, it's like, it's my life. So I don't say anything that's worth anything. You know, this, I'm sorry, but I don't want to devalue this interview, but nothing that I say can even scratch the surface of what I articulate in my music. So for me, I can't be like, oh, I want to write a song about this. I have to just attack it, you know, just attack it. How do I feel? You know, where am I and how do I feel? That's all I'm asking myself. And then just translating that with the mediums.
Okay, I can appreciate that. First of all, though, I do need to defend this interview. Because I love talking to you, and I understand what you're saying sometimes, I understand what you're saying in this instance, that nothing you can say will properly articulate the passion you have for music on some level, and also the impulsive nature of it. Like, you have an idea, there's no point in waiting around for a studio booking to get it down.
Right.
If you have the means to get it down, like, that moment that you have the idea is just as integral to the song as when we get to hear it and when you get to record it. Like, it's all part of the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And there's just, right, there's an energy that dissipates exponentially as you scrutinize your creative work. It is drained of its potency. You know, so that's all I'm trying to do is integrate my practice into my life, like, to such a degree that it's a one-to-one conversation.
Does it make you impatient to have these artistic impulses, and not impatient? Does it fill you with urgency that you need, if you have an idea? And your practice is generally to capture those ideas as they're happening, and let them live that little life that you've frozen them in time. You had the idea as soon as you possibly can. You freeze it in time on some level. Is there an urgency? Like, have people been around you at the movies and you're like, oh my God, I have an idea. I have to leave. I have to go now. Like, are you that kind of person? Like, do you need to do it immediately? Is that your deal?
I mean, I'm so rarely do I tear myself away from that environment anyway, where I can just do that. That, like, so when I do, it's like, it's the downside of all of this that I'm saying, of this tandem that I feel with my creativity, is that my social life suffers, and I don't make time, you know, to be available or to really, like, just engage with the world in a way that is outside of that. I don't know. Like,
Is that healthy? Is this a compulsion?
No. And, like, I'm working on that now. I'm trying to be more present, because I've funneled all of my presence and all of my understanding of being into having those conversations and those dialogues, like, with myself. So, you know, as I get older, I realize that there's, you know, I'm just amazed that there's more to life than music, and I'm exploring that.
Okay, so you and I are speaking on a telephone. I believe it's a landline right now, right?
Yeah.
But do you now have, I think you were saying this before we started rolling, do you now have your own personal cellular mobile phone?
Just got one, yeah.
And does it have, is it an one created by the company Apple?
No, but, you know, I do have like an iPod. That I use for Instagram and all this, you know.
Okay.
So I've got Apple products, you know. I'm a modern man.
I appreciate that. I think of you as ultra modern, if that makes any sense. It's sort of a being that transcends time and space, but I feel like you're more futuristic than you know, whatever. But my point here is this, and I don't know if you've explored this at all already. Okay, let me put it this way. Where I'm going with this, you could probably tell, is that these phones and these iPods have a voice memo recording thing on them.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a lot of songwriters. I just read a book by a songwriter, and he talks about how the voice memo thing has changed his creative process, because as soon as he has an idea in a hotel room, you know, at a soccer game with his kids, whatever, he can just hum it into his phone or play guitar. If he has like an idea for a guitar part or a piano part, he can play it into his phone and then he revisits it later as part of an exercise. Are you so my questions are twofold. One, have you explored this with the phone or the iPod or whatever you have now? And two, are you a demo person? Because I don't know that you are that. I feel like the things we're hearing from you on your records feel like first thoughts on some level. So you're not a demo person generally, yes?
No, I really don't. I don't have patience for a demo. I don't have patience for like but it's more than that too. It's really like, to me, like I said, all with every consideration, a significant amount of the of just that purity is lost from the statement. So for me to have a song that I can then reference and remake is like a nightmare. You know, there's a lot of value to that, you know, in the sense of allowing things to marinate. Like on this record, I did let things marinate for like a lot longer than I ever have, just because, like I said, I was lacking the gear to make the record with the instrumentation that I desired, you know, when I laid these beds down last year. And I was also exploring, like, you know, the synth and whatnot. But otherwise, the idea is like always to get back to the source, you know. So that just becomes harder and harder, you know. Like I always mention the Neil Young quote: "When you're thinking, you're stinking."
Well, that's fair, but some people are, and Neil Young is an example. He might have a germ of an idea, but generally, he has a band he has to bring the idea to and translate. So they all have to kind of interpret the idea that he has. And then together they kind of translate into something we're all going to hear. You generally tend to work on your own in terms of your recordings, right? This is all you?
Yeah, all me playing, all me mixing, and all the production is me, except for some additional engineering from a good friend of mine who's worked on my last record too, Mark Lawson.
Right, Mark, okay, yeah. So you're really just up against yourself. You know, you don't have to sort of show and prove what you've done to your band or other people. And I guess I wonder if that, I mean, except, and then live is a whole other thing. Live is also kind of, it's in the moment stuff too. It's a little, there's a slight improvisation to your live show too, right?
Yeah. It's important for me to, in the same sense of what I was saying, it's like, it's almost got the inverse approach in performance, is that in order to get to the source live, I have to toy with the framework, or within the framework,
like,
I should say.
I can't recall if, like, I say improvisation, but like, you're not married. Your songs have like a, they can anyway. And I want to get to this because I feel like there's a bit of a shift on this record. You mentioned you let things marinate a bit longer and think of, like, you know, you didn't just go with your first thought. You thought about things a little bit, I think. And where I was going with that is that I feel like there are more solid and accessible song structures here than maybe some of your past work.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get to that in a moment. But live, when you have been able, it's odd for us to be talking about live music, I assume, for you too at this point, because there's not a lot of it going around because of the pandemic. But from what my experience seeing you live, the few times I have, it felt like things were, you probably had a plan, but it felt like things were happening in the moment that surprised even you. Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, I love getting surprised on stage. Like, I think, I love it. I love being lost in my own song. I love that. Because it's like, it's just fantastic. You know, life is so fucking boring. I want to be excited. I want to be surprised. But, you know, I say that, you know, I think life is, you know, magical and magnificent as well. But
so this surprising your, but again, like, you're sort of surprising your, It's like the songs have their own entity, or are their own little... Do you think of them as like little organisms, so to speak?
Yeah, well, I don't really feel like... I don't really feel like, you know, I don't write my songs, and I don't really do anything but record them. Like, every track that's on a song of mine is, you know, partially improvised and I had the idea within the hour that it was recorded. So
this is purposeful. This is a purposeful sort of stance you've taken, or just a methodology you've employed. It has to be, you're not going to overthink this on some level. Like, getting back to the preciousness thing about recording studios, you've kind of applied this to your art as a creator as well.
Yeah. Well, it's like, instead of using my head, I'm going to use my body. I'm going to feel what is relevant, feel what needs to be said, you know? I mean, and it's not even what needs to be said by me. And it's not even, going back to what you're saying about organisms, it's like, I don't impose my will on this music. This music is, you know, and it always was.
Yeah.
And whatever form that takes, you know, all music is in the air for anybody to grab, you know? And I just grab this shit, you know? So it's not like I'm not putting my, I don't know. Maybe I'll leave it there.
You're not putting your own kind of parameters on something. It's or something. You're not imposing your own will upon the songs, except that they're your songs. Is that?
Yeah, and the music. What I mean by that is that the music is just begging, you know, for a very specific feeling. It's begging for a feeling. It's not, you know, it's not, you know, music is not asking me for my opinion. Music is not asking me for my opinion, really. So it's just begging for very specific feeling, and so my job is to translate that, you know, however I want. Because, like I said, this music is out there for anybody. You know, when you write a song, you just wrote it before somebody else. So
that's fair. I feel like the subtext of what we're discussing is kind of a kind of editing,
right?
Like songwriters do it. So when you do a demo, then you take it to the band, and then you make the what ends up being on the record, you put out in the public. The kind of trajectory there is a lot of editing. Let's just use the term editing. It can be all sorts of things, but let's call it editing. And so on some level, that refinement process, you kind of, when you go to perform live, most artists will try to honor that refinement process by saying, okay, let's play the version that we landed on, because there must be something to that. But then I think about your work, and I think about people. People tend to change. People tend to progress. And in a sense, we're all these... I don't want to sound like I'm in a Lifetime movie here making a speech. But in a sense, we're all these kind of rough drafts, living our lives, and things happen, and we edit ourselves. We change... We evolve, and sometimes that means we can't relate to the way we used to be, and the things we didn't maybe think about enough, now we think about enough. Your songs, your catalog of music, reflects time and space for you as an individual, but they are instantaneous kind of thoughts on some level, instantaneous kind of impulses and creative outbursts. So I wonder, as you've grown and changed, because that refinement didn't occur or what have you, and this is where the argument kind of gets on shaky ground, because I'm sure there are artists who have gone through what I'm talking about, the editing process, so to speak, and then also cannot relate to their younger selves or their, you know, the selves that created those things. But for you, as someone who is almost always presenting impulsive ideas to the world, does this, and also... in a live setting, they change, they surprise you. Do you ever have difficulty relating to your earlier work because it's not you anymore and it didn't go through a kind of process of thinking about it, pondering it on some level? Sorry, that was a long-winded and perhaps unclear question, but do you see where I'm coming from?
I'm following.
Yeah.
I'm following. Yeah, I actually do relate a lot to my... There's a clear marker for me. When I was 16, I really started experimenting with music. Like I'm saying, music just walking really arm in arm with the work and really putting the time in to have as little between an idea and a recording as possible. So when I started the Unblonde project, the first full length I put out was called Tenet, and that is where my marker, that's where the marker for me is of like the relevance to my body of work, to my greater catalog, is that I from then on is I'm very content with that speaking for my trajectory.
Okay.
And because, you know, the thing about it is that it goes back to, it's all just approach. So like I was getting at, you know, with a different set of, with a different level of ability and with a different instrumentation and maybe with different intentions and with different stories to, you know, want to mold, really getting at the exact same thing always. Like I feel like I'll always be getting at the same thing. And I hear that when I listen to my work from 2014 to now. I'm always trying to say the same thing. Yeah.
Do you have a sense of particular lyrical themes that run throughout this new record, Sundry Rock Song Stock? Because if they're of a time of, and like, I think we have a sense from your work that it's something internal that's coming out. Obviously, I mean, it's like a personal expression, and we're learning little bits about you. But I also wonder if your time and space sort of work reflects the larger world around you. I mean, as we're I know this record was made before, likely, I'm going to guess here, likely before a pandemic, and likely before we were more, our sense of how deeply troubling police violence and, you know, what and social unrest and how important the Black Lives Matter movement has been and should be at front of mind for so many of us. I assume most of these songs were kind of written and recorded prior to this collective experience. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I was done the record for the most part before, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. The content, lyrically, a lot of the content was, I was writing it in March of this year.
Oh, okay. So it was right in the beginning stages of this.
Yeah, but like my springboards are, you know, I've got a long list of, you know, I had maybe 100 bullet points that I wanted to mention, and that's pretty much the majority of the lyrics that you hear. So like I have these springboard phrases and words that are all on the record. There's like maybe, I don't know, you know, every line has one of these words, or every line is, you know, from this list. So
okay,
it was all written in the past, but it was like put together this year. Yeah.
Just ahead of knowing how serious the various things I've talked about were going to get, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was done with the record before, I was glad, like, I can't write topically, you know? So if things are being spoken about, I can't, like, It won't find its way into my music. So the fact that I'm talking about maybe certain relevant things now is indicative of the fact that those things didn't come to be in this time.
Right. So topically, yeah, generally would mean like, did Eve Jarvis write a song about, you know, Donald Trump or like the Black Lives Matter movement or this or that? I understand that that's one sense of what topically means. But if you, as a artist, are in the moment, every song is you in that moment. I guess I wonder how much, and you're saying like you had a list of springboard ideas, but I guess I wonder how that list and your general thought, like your general mood and feelings, how that intersects with what is going on externally in the wider world. I mean, if you've woken up and read the paper, so to speak. I mean, who reads a paper anymore? But you know what I mean? If you read the news,
yeah,
and then you go about your day and part of your day is going to be writing a song, I understand the impulse to not tie yourself to a topical subject matter because it might date the song quite literally, but surely the stuff that we're all living through, you're a person living among us. that stuff sort of does enter your work, I'm guessing, yes?
Yeah, but only in the sense that I'm like a mirror, so as we all should be. So it's like very subconscious for me.
Are you averse? Like, I kind of led you down this road, and I don't mean to. Are you averse to writing a truly, like, here's how I feel about a thing that's happening now in the world? Are you averse to being that kind of songwriter?
To me, yeah. To me, that's like just heavy-handed in itself. And it's like nothing constructive comes from being so blunt. You have to be a little bit more subtle and nuanced, I think, in your conversation in order to really spark a constructive dialogue, you know. If that's what art is getting at, then like I don't want to be heavy-handed in any way. Like, I don't want to address anything. You know what I'm saying? I want people to draw, like, I want people to hear lines that stick out to them in their circumstance, and then years later hear a new line that sticks out to them in that new circumstance. And meanwhile, I'm talking about, you know, something completely separate from that or whatever, you know. So I really don't look at writing as an outlet. It's just like music, it's just a tool for evoking feelings for people wherever they may be, you know, wherever they might find themselves.
So you've got about an hour-long deadline to capture a musical idea. Is the melody swimming around in your head much prior to that hour, so to speak?
No, I'll force myself. It's like a meditation where I'll just center myself and really confront how I'm feeling. And there's no will and there's no idea, you know?
That's fascinating. Okay, so let's go back to what I'm trying to get to the sound of this new record in particular. I noticed what I think are some sort of distinctions on the song structures here than maybe some of your past work. I obviously think it's part of your trajectory. I don't think it's too far off, but would you agree? Like, it does feel like there's more, I don't want to say pop necessarily, but there's like a sense of like real sturdy structures here that I noticed it. What do you make of that? Is there something informing the particular approach you took to structuring these songs?
Well, I was particularly influenced by the tour that I mentioned I did in Europe with Aldous Harding, and just the way that she manages to navigate her music with, like, going back to space. I mean, she's just, and I am using the term in reference to proximity here, because the way that she engages with the music is with a patience that, like, I haven't explored, and I see how effective that is to say certain things and to convey certain ideas and emotions. I saw the impact that this openness had on people who, I don't know, people who...
By openness, do you mean kind of willful inclusivity? I do feel like if you make a song, just the way people are programmed to process music, if you make a song that has a steady structure and some flow to it, like some form of, a verse, I'm not talking lyrics here or singing, but if you create a piece of music and it has movement, but it sort of has repetition, like a verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus sort of structure,
yeah,
that is kind of doing them a favor. That's doing the listener a favor. Like, you're not just...
Oh, yeah, it's very generous.
It's generous of the artist, because you and I think, both have some experience with improvised music or free music, and you have long, I think, in your general approach, you are within the realm of a free musician. I think that's fair to say, whatever that
Absolutely.
Term might mean for anyone. Right. So yeah. What I'm saying is, this feels a little less abstract on the one hand in terms of the musical beds. They feel more comfortable. You could have a lie. You could have a nap on one of your musical beds here, whereas before, in some, and even on this record too, there are instances where you're like, this is not a comfortable bed. I need to, like, I get it. It's cool, but I can't deal with it. So you're saying something happened where you wanted to try to make some of these beds a bit more comfortable.
Well, yeah, I really want to be like, I want to be an accessible figure, you know, and I was saying this before, I've said this before, but it's not that I think that my past work has been inaccessible. It's just that it takes an attention that maybe I don't warrant that attention from somebody who's never heard of me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's self-indulgent to assume that, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry are going to want to, you know, listen to my 20 song, you know, whatever. So,
well, I don't view this as some kind of compromise or something where you,
right.
I think accessibility gets a bad rap sometimes. And
of course,
Yeah, you're not selling out or anything. I'm just saying, okay, just making sure
and
we're clear.
And the same narrative arc that exists in, because I'm an album guy, so the same rises and falls and the same sequencing is present on this record despite the shortened track list. The shortened track list was merely a shape for people to see and to say, okay, you know, I can hit shuffle on this. I can hit play on this, and I don't know shit about this guy because, you know, I want as many listeners as possible. You know, I'm trying to grow.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to grow, and I feel like I felt like this year right now, you know, people might have wanted, you know, the reason why I made 20 song albums was because it felt important and it felt necessary to do, right? So, but now it just doesn't right now. So
right.
I felt like it was a way for me to open myself up to, you know, anybody who doesn't care about me and who might just want to see what I'm all about. You know, this is the project that I I'm putting forward to really speak for my greater body of work.
Okay, I appreciate that. Now, one of the things I will do now to potentially counter the accessibility or ease of accessibility conversation we've been having is ask you about the vocals. I'm a little fixated on the multi-layered vocals that you tend to employ because I think on the one hand, it creates an interesting effect. On another, I feel like it creates an opaqueness. There is a willful enigmatic quality to multi-layering one's voice. Some people do it for all sorts of reasons. They create harmonies or whatever. You have a very unique and distinct way of doing multi-layered vocals. Can you talk about that in the context of this particular record? Why do so many of the songs, if not all of them, I don't have them all in front of me because I'm talking to you. I'm not listening to your album right now, but I feel like most of them contain multiple versions of you singing. And I find that fascinating given how in the moment the original vocal line likely was that you had to take the time to match that instinctual expression. What is going on there with your approach to vocals on this record?
Well, for me, it's like, you know, it's a textural thing. I think that the content is important, you know, so I don't want it to be overlooked just because of its inintelligibility maybe. But I don't know if I just used the right word.
It's the exact right word, and it does impact that. It does impact our ability to basically understand what you're saying. And I know that some people, singing, as you probably know, I'm sure you do, maybe you don't because you do everything mostly yourself, but any band will tell you that as soon as they go to record something, when the drummer and the bass player, when the basic bed tracks are done, one of the hardest things then is for the vocalist to be on their own singing, just stark naked in the studio, basically, like on their own singing. Like it can be it's a very unusual thing that we have set up here that someone goes into an isolation booth by themselves and just sings.
Well,
and so a lot of the multi-layered vocals and whatnot and the mixing, I feel like some people are self-conscious about their singing, so they hide it, they disguise it a little bit. And so I don't want to, this is not meant to be a psychological deep dive into you, But when someone like you takes a vocal line and submerges it, in this case, in other vocal lines, I wonder if that's psychological. Like, you have intent, you say, you had things you want to say, but you're kind of hiding them, wouldn't you say?
Well, I don't want to be, again, going back to the heavy-handedness, I want my voice to play the same role that the instruments play in my music.
A texture.
And so that is
a texture.
Yeah, it's a texture, yeah. and it's only there to convey emotion and thought, so, and spark it. So for me, my voice plays the role of, like, you know when you're like, I don't know if you have memories of like being a baby, like on your mother's, like chest, in your mother's arms, you know, and the quality that their voice plays, you know, the quality that their voice has, it's like just, I don't know, it's just like,
it's like comforting and familiar.
Familiar and comforting.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you want the vocals, your vocals to have the same kind of texture. Like, to your point, as a baby, you may not have the faculty to understand what is being said, but you get that there's a deep meaning behind the sound of someone's voice.
Absolutely.
Right. So you're viewing your voice the same way. Okay. I can appreciate that. And I'm glad I asked these questions because, frankly, I think they're pretty good questions, and you've done a good job answering them. But I do now want to get back to potential intent, lyrical meaning.
Yeah.
Looking back on this record, knowing that, by the way, you say, we mentioned the hour, you know, roughly you have about an hour. It's like you're a spy and you need to complete a mission each song, it sounds like. You have an hour deadline. How many days were you spending making this particular record?
But you know what? It's not really like that. It's not really like I'm squeezing my time in and I'm trying to like execute something. It's like going back to the preciousness. It's like I don't, my studio isn't like a place that I go. It's like, I'll like record for 5 minutes and then I'll drop it. And then I'll like make some food, smoke a joint,
hit the
studio again for 5 minutes, get something brilliant down, you know? Then leave.
It's not like a 60-minute clock is running down.
No. I'll be like in the studio, in and out, and it's like it'll seem like I'm doing nothing, but I'm just like feathering shit off, or like just poking it into the place, and something will take shape through the course of the day.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair. So you don't know how many days you spent, or do you know like the rough? How about this? Do you have a rough idea of when you started this record? You said you kind of wrapped it up around March, but what time frame of your life, months, weeks, do you have a sense of when you started and when it ended?
Yeah, well, actually, I finished it maybe mid-April. I remember it was past my birthday. I was working on my birthday, so...
Happy birthday. I forgot to send you a note.
Oh, gosh, no. It's so meaningless. But thank you. thank you.
It's... Birthdays are important. It's not me.
Yeah, but
please.
No, you don't have to feel any, you know, of course. You know.
I'll get over it.
So you ended
mid-April, started...
Probably July last year. July.
Okay, so quite a time span. Okay. So the reason I ask this is because I do think of you as a time and place person. If you can kind of think about this record now that it's been out a little while, can you kind of... sense an overarching theme in terms of what your intent lyrically really was? You said you had that list of springboard ideas, but when you actually now contemplate the final sequence of this record and what's going on, do you have a sense of that? What is going on this record in terms of what you were feeling, what it might be? I don't want to say what it was about because that's too heavy-handed, but do you have a sense of where these songs might be coming from, particular thoughts or moods that... strike you as you listen back?
Yeah, well, you know, personally, I struggle so much with authority and establishment and, you know, the social structures and societal norms. I'm really just confronting my ego in the face of society and trying to come to grips with my... difficulties, my difficulties in life. Yeah. And I think that I'm just trying to express sentiments of just anti-authority all the way, 1,000%.
Well, you seem there's the anti-authority thing, but you generally just seem anti-convention.
Yeah,
and exactly. The, and the way that authority figures assume convention is the only way to go.
Yeah, authority is just a target. Is just an easier target.
Well, you have a song here called Fact Almighty, which I thought was interesting, given even what we've just been talking about. Like this notion that there's only a one right way or one right thing to think.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's what that song is necessarily about, but even as a title, that's fascinating.
I'm glad to hear that. That was in the springboard for sure, that title. I think all of those song titles were in the springboard.
Is it possible? Are you the type of person where the song title has nothing to do with what you're talking about in the song?
No, it's always like actually the opposite. It's like for me, my song titles are like the flags in the ground. You know, it's like I really put my foot down on my foot title, on my song titles. I call them foot titles. Put my foot down on them though. Yeah.
Okay. That's good to hear. Well, now we are in this moment of suspension. I don't, what are you kind of doing in this period of suspension to, you know, kind of, keep present, I suppose, or are you even doing that? What do you, in terms of getting the word out about this record and those sorts of things? You know, there's been a lot of streaming performances and recording canned videos and you know, of performances.
Yeah,
are you engaging with that stuff?
Yeah, well, I've done a few. I'm in this beautiful location, so like I feel like I have something to offer. You know, if I was in the city, I wouldn't bother. I would refuse every single one, but I'm in this beautiful nature, and I'm able to shoot something that I think other people are, you know, always in their studios and whatnot. So, and it pertains to my work and whatever. So I've done a few concerts, and I think I'll do a couple more, until it snows. But otherwise I'm like recording like crazy. I have like a new project with Romy done, ready to go.
Oh. Okay.
Just finished putting it together last night. And
just last night you did that? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but also I've been moving a lot faster, you know, because my, like I said, I had that tour that broke up like the recording, and I didn't have like drums and bass with me, so that's why I didn't. You know, I would have probably finished the record last year if I had what I have now. So this record that Romy and I made, I started working on it like August, and it's done now. So, and it's 15 songs. It's huge, massive record. And I think I'm going to try and put it out before the end of the year.
Now, for people who don't know, you mentioned Romy Lightman, and Romy with her twin sister Sari are they still in a band called Tassiomancy?
Yeah, they have an amazing record that's ready to go to.
Okay.
Lots of records in the can. Yeah.
And so what is this is a project between you and Romy. Does it have a name?
Yeah, we're called the Lightman Jarvis Ecstatic Band.
Oh, well, that's vaguely reminds me of, like, you know, the Plastic Ono Band or something.
Yeah, good. That's a great beacon for us is Yoko and John. We love them.
Okay. Yeah. So we may, at some point, we'll see this come out somehow.
Yeah, I think I'll probably just put it out myself because the music is much too urgent to. I hope a label picks it up. I'm sure somebody will be interested because this music is earth shattering, truly.
Well, I want to hear it. I want to hear it as soon as possible.
So yeah,
you have one excited fan so far, Eve. If that makes any difference to you,
absolutely.
Okay, all right.
It's been under wraps, so this is the announcement right here.
So I'm glad you're, thank you. I'm glad you're, thanks for the hot tip. And I appreciate that you've been recording a lot. So that means, when you say you've been recording a lot, it's not just for that project, yourself as well?
Yeah, I hope to have a solo record in the new year, sometime in the front of the new year. That'd be great. Yeah, I'm able to, I for the first time in years since high school is the first time I've had really a complete studio. With the drums and the bass and everything. So I'm making noise and I'm working at a pace that I haven't in years. So I think that'll
that's great.
Really possible. Yeah.
That's really great. So if people want to learn more about you and your work using technology, the internet, where would you send them?
I would say Instagram because, like I said, I've got a lot of great content there of me just outside with the full setup, using the elements to my advantage, beautiful shots, beautiful improvs, some good video on my Instagram, I think. Yeah.
Okay, and I follow you on your Instagram. What is your Instagram? Is it just Eve Jarvis?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, at Eve Jarvis. Okay, cool. Now, if there's one song from this album that we've been talking about, Sundry Rock Song Stock. By the way, hell of a title. What does that mean?
Yeah, it was like, it's just, I wanted to address that it was rock songs, like rock music. I'm on the shield, so the rock is prevalent in my life. The hardness is important. Density, it's all related. But also just sundry, I just wanted it to be like a contrived, a highfalutin way of saying album, rock album, because
right.
People are so, I mean, I feel like because I am such a like dynamic songwriter, like I feel like genre is always a conversation with me, and I just wanted to, you know, from personally, if you're asking me, it's just rock. It's just rock, experimental rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's folk. You know, elements of everything. You could call it folk too, experimental folk. But this record is a rock record. So I want to just leave it at that, you know. No R&B, okay. Not even really. I mean, I'll say folk or rock.
So it's a little bit of a pushback against how you've been generically pigeonholed in the past.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to like just have the final say on it.
I can appreciate that you would want to do that. I remember we talked about this the last time, that people kind of assume you're one thing and you're like, what? Like, I maybe a little bit, but I'm not any one thing. Like, so this is sort of tongue in cheek, but also purposeful.
Yeah. Okay. Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So where I was going with this is, to end this thing, I hope you can pick a song from the newest album for us to go out on. And if you can do that, and also tell us why you chose it, that would be great. Do you have something in mind?
Yeah, well, my favorite song on the record is, I think, Notch in Your Belt.
Oh, now why is that? Why is it your favorite, and why did that come to mind?
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe it's not Notch in Your Belt. Maybe it's maybe it's Emerald.
Emerald is,
yeah.
Yeah, I like For Props. I like Ambrosia is kind of weird. I like Emerald. Okay, yeah, whatever you want is fine by me. But you just second-guessed yourself and undercut one of your own little songs. You said Notch in Your Belt was your favorite, and then now you're playing them against each other and went with Emerald, so they're going to be upset. Which one do you think?
I think Emerald.
Okay. Any particular reason why?
Yeah, well, I just think the sounds they feel really nice. The sounds feel amazing on that song. I think that the lyrics are, you are adorned, sapphire jewelry, emerald wreaths, diamond ruby, aquamarine, amethyst rings. To me, it was just like, it's an ode to beauty. It's like a gift to somebody else, or it's for yourself. I thought of it being like something you could play at your funeral. I think it would be a good funeral song.
What do you mean literally? You can't literally play something at your own funeral. You're dead.
Yeah, but arrange it. Put it in the will or whatever. Put it in the, make arrangements so that Emerald can play at your funeral. I think it'll be apt.
Okay, I'll take care of that after. I'll contact my lawyer and make those revisions, but that's fine. Okay, by the way, you don't write down your songs, like you don't write them. So that means lyrics as well. Do you, once you've recorded a song and the words, do you write it down after?
Yeah, I do. I like that's a really fun part of the process for me. I love like just like how exciting it is for me to listen to a mixed, like when it's mixed, having those stream of consciousness lyrics be written down and seeing the form that was being very nearsighted. It was being very nearsighted. I was following it, you know, and to like step back from away from that and to be able to look at the posture and the shape of the lyric is a really exciting thing for me, because the stories and the narratives that are like begging me to be told and expressed in the music are they are.
Okay, I appreciate that. This is Emerald by Eve Jarvis. Eve, thank you so much for returning to this show and making time for me again. It's always a pleasure, and I wish you the best luck with everything going forward, and I hope we talk soon.
Thank you, Vish, for your time. I really appreciate your support and your platform and talking to you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ah, it's very nice to have Eve Jarvis back on the show, this time for the 581st episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever it is you get your podcasts, on Apple, Google, Spotify, or what have you. It's there. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me, sign up for my monthly newsletter. I have a monthly newsletter. You can sign up for that too. All of these things, you can do all of these things at my website, vishkana.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at vishkana. You can follow me on Twitter at vishkana, or you can follow the show on Twitter directly at vishcreative. Also, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast from now and into the future. Your monthly donations really do sustain the podcast, and any donations, $6 or more, if you donate $6 or more a month, you get access to exclusive audio content. So that's pretty good. So whatever you can donate, that would be great. Go to patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to liveatmasseyhall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts by great Canadian artists. They're starting to slowly build that library up a little bit. They recently added a Kathleen Edwards concert, which tells me maybe they've got some more stuff coming. So yeah, liveatmasseyhall.com for more info about that. Also, Pete's Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. They all have my gratitude for their in-kind support for this show. Also, my friend Jim Guthrie loans me some music for the podcast. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode with Eve. I hope you enjoyed it. I did. I always like talking to Eve. Also, if you want to tell your friends about Creative Control and ask them to, you know, check out the show, maybe consider subscribing to it or what have you, that would be great. Following it somehow, that would be awesome. But if you don't want to do that and you just want to listen, that's fine too. Thank you very much for doing this. I will talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.